Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Mascani. And our panel this evening is, we have Anita, we have Brother Machinda, we have Professor Amin Ra, and we have somebody in the background, and I need to get her name again, that we can't see.
Patricia Porte.
Patricia Porte. Okay, and Patricia Porte, yes, is a part of our panel this evening. Mm-hmm. And our guest this evening is Naveline Smith. Naveline Smith is a lady that's very courageous. She took on the county of, I think, the county of Los Angeles. I think she took on Hood. I'm in the process of reading her book. Her book is The Last Lady Standing in Ujima Village. Ujima Village is located in Los Angeles, right near Compton. That's Avalon, El Segundo, and Central. That's the area in Magic Johnson Park. And so I'm in the process of reading her book. I met her 2 weeks ago, and from the conversations we had, she's a very courageous lady and has a wonderful story to tell. And we're going to get straight to it. Welcome, Naveline. And tell us
hello,
a little bit,
thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and then tell us about your book.
Well, I'm originating from a little old small country town, Jackson, Michigan. And I came to California and, like everybody else, to pursue their goal and acting and modeling. Actually, I used to imitate Carol Burnett. I traveled around with Jimmy Dorsey's orchestra doing shows and, you know, and then for some strange reason, I turned into an activist when I got to California. Basically, I have been fighting the fight for the homeless people. I have helped people get into housing, you know, clothes. I took them clothes, food, and I've been also homeless myself. When I got kicked out of Ujima Village, I had the money to buy a place, but I couldn't find a place. And so I was going from place to place, you know, until I took on the county of Los Angeles and won the money. Actually, they held the money. They held the $30,000 until I found a place. I got awarded $50,000 and they held the $30,000. And they put the $20,000 in my hand and told me to get the hell out of there. So it took me like a year to find housing, find a home.
So you want to tell us a little bit more about your book and some of the highlights, yes, of the book, and then how you took on the county of Los Angeles and Mark Ridley Thomas?
Well, mm-hmm. Well, first of all, in 1984, a developer came to Ujima Village and they said, they were going to purchase the place, and they decided that the place was contaminated. And so they had to do a relocation act. And so at the time, Supervisor Yvonne Burke was in office, and she left $8 million for the people in Ujima Village, and she left $8 million for the people in Ujima Village and for the demolition. And what happened was, by that time, it was Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas' time to step in. So he decided he was going to give all the African-American people $1,500 and a Section 8 voucher. And I had already been on the county Section 8 program for 23 years. I was making good money, so it was time for me to get off. And this is the problem. Section 8 is designed for you to be on it. And if you can get off, get off. But for some strange reason, they wanted me to stay on. So they fought me and they tried to make me keep my Section 8 voucher, and I refused. So they did a relocation act because the place underneath Ujima Village was oil tanks. So the oil tanks came loose and the fumes came up. So people were dying there from cancer. 50 plus people, it's probably 70 now, have died from cancer. And the attorney said, and the County of Los Angeles and other individuals, this is set in stone. It's not no hearsay. They typed this in and send it out to everybody, that the people in Ujima Village should have known it was contaminated before we moved in. Well, I'm here to tell you, when I signed my lease, did nobody tell me, hey, Naveline, don't move in Ujima Village because it's contaminated. No one told me that. And Mark Ridley Thomas said that everybody who lived in Ujima Village was going to have medical for the rest of our lives. Well, I'm wondering, where is it? Nobody has contacted us and said, come get your checkup. We're still dying. I could drop dead right now. My daughter has had 3 operations. Half of her throat has been removed because of the soil. The doctor told her, wherever you was at, it's the soil. And like I said, it was a class action lawsuit, but it was thrown out because the attorneys said we should have known it was contaminated before we moved in. And I'm having a really bad problem with that, because Porter Ranch had this big explosion and they got $8.5 billion. They had rashes, they had nosebleeds, okay? They had all of that. And they came in and washed their walls down. Nobody died. But the people in Ujima Village died. And, you know, I'm like, where is everybody to help us? No one helped us. Everybody was on their own. They took that little $1,500 in that Section 8 and they left. Well, I wasn't going to leave with no Section 8 voucher. So it was 365 units on 16 acres of land. Everybody relocated but me, my brother, my son, and the rescue dog. So I was there all by myself, fighting the County of Los Angeles for the money to get me a house. I wasn't leaving out of there with no $1,500 and no Section 8 voucher, and nobody was going to make me take that. And how many people know that that happened in Ujima Village? Because they pushed it under the rug because, you know, it's a Black community. And, you know, it's what they did to me while I was in there. The police came one night, 20 carloads of police officers, and surrounded Ujima Village. They knocked on the door. Well, actually, they came earlier and just went on in through the house, and they asked my brother, where is Naveline? And my brother said, she's at work. And they said, well, the house is clean. They said that my house was dirty, which I know that was a lie. So later on that night at 12 o'clock, bang, bang, bang. And my brother said, who is it? It's the sheriff. Open up the door. Okay. He opened up the door. Where's Naveline? I said, here I am. And the social worker was with her. And she said, you got to leave right now. And I'm like, well, why do I have to leave? Because the place is contaminated. I said, but I'm still paying rent because I know my rights. And so she said, well, let me call the supervisor. The supervisor said, you got to get out of here right now. I said, well, where am I going? She said, use the money they gave you. I said, didn't nobody give me any money? She said, you getting out of here. I said, oh, else we're going to take your son. That's what the focus was. They were trying to take my son from me, but they didn't have no right. At the time, it was a little boy upstairs playing with my son. And the mother came and got him. They did not go and knock on that mother's door, only mine's. So the police asked, Miss Smith, where are you going? I said, I'm going to the gas station to put gas in my car. Let's let this be a police pursuit all night. Y'all can follow me around. I don't have nowhere to go. And so 20 carloads of police officers for me. So they let me go. I sued the county of Los Angeles, Children's Social Services, and I won. Because when you put a person out, you're supposed to put them up, and they didn't do that. They just kicked me out. And then they made me go to a psychiatrist. There was a card on the door. I called the psychiatrist. He said, Ms. Smith, I came out there looking for you. I said, oh, you did? What did they tell you that I work? No. Did they tell you my son is in a private school? No, they didn't tell me that, but you got to come in. The next day I went to go see him, he said, Ms. Smith, take your son and leave. I said, why? He said, because they're trying to take him. I said, they're not going to take my son from me. And so he said, they walked your folder in. They never have walked anybody's folder in. And while I was sitting there talking to him, he gave me a wonderful review. He wanted me to take medication. Well, the county of Los Angeles considered me crazy. So they had this medication for me to take. He said, Ms. Smith, please don't take this medication. I said, I feed from God. I'm not taking no medication. All of this because I did not want to be on the welfare for the rest of my life, because I wanted to do better in my life. And they fought me like that. You know, and it's just, they just did so many things to me. You know, I went to, there was one person that helped me, and that was from the Legal Aid Foundation. And they, his name was Fernando. So we go downtown at the last meeting. After the meeting, Fernando said, Ms. Smith, don't say nothing because they'll walk behind you. They'll walk behind you and listen. Sure enough, the county of Los Angeles attorney walked behind me and was listening to the conversation. He said, Ms. Smith, I want you to sign this gag order. Well, I felt like the commercial, the Geico commercial. I can't take that ride. I said, I'm not signing that. I said, I'm going to tell what y'all did to me. The attorney chased me down the street to sign the gag order. I still didn't sign it. Because for the people that don't know what a gag order is, that means that anytime I open up my mouth and talk, I could go to jail. So I wasn't signing that, period. And so they did everything that they could. And I went to so many Black organizations for help. Nobody helped me. Begging them to help me. Begging them. Telling them, I don't want to be on the county of Los Angeles. Supervisor Yvonne Burke left money for us. If you type in what happened to the $8 million that we're supposed to get, the screen goes black. So what happened to the money? You know, and like I said, no one helped us. Now, from Fernando helping me, the Legal Aid Foundation, every year they give attorneys, it's called the Star Award. So they gave him the Star Award for helping us, and they honored us at the Beverly Hilton Hotel, because they honored me, him, and a couple of other people, because I fought for my rights. And then he found out that when you do a relocation act in a low income place, you're supposed to have a choice, either $50,000 or the $1,500 in a Section 8 voucher. But how many people still know about that? That's the law. So, like I said, everybody ran. And nobody helped me. No politician, Laura Richardson, that's running for office, she came there in her big yellow bus. At the time she was running for a supervisor, she said, I want everybody to come go with me. I saw right through her. I knew she wasn't no good. She came to a meeting one night and said, the legal aid attorneys have to go. I stood up and said, if they leave, we leave. She sat down. No one helped us. They all ran. And what did they do? They sent half the people up to Palmdale. So nobody helped us. And if it wasn't for me, just standing my ground, I wouldn't be in my house now because they tried to take the money from me. They gave me $20,000 in my hand, the attorney, and said, get the hell out of here, like that. So what did I do? The $30,000 they held, they said, we're going to keep this money until you get a house. So they didn't think I was going to get a house, but I got a house. Been in my house for 9 years, okay? And what they did the last day when I was in Ujima Village, somebody was sitting in the front watching me pack. They made me, when I was finished, they made me lock the door, put the key in their hand, and followed me out like I was a criminal. What did I do? What did I do wrong? And then, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
That you stood up.
I stood up because I wasn't scared. They weren't going to take me down. And everybody's like, oh, you know, what if they do anything to you? And I'm still saying these words. If anybody do anything to me, y'all just come to my funeral and say that was a lady that wasn't scared to fight. Because I'm not. You know, I tried to get all the African-American people to stay there and fight, but they were scared and they ran. And they could have had a lot more money. But this is how some African-American people, you know, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know if it's from slavery that we're scared to fight. I don't know. I don't know why we're scared to fight.
Well, you know what? Let's see if we can get some questions from the panel here.
Okay.
All right, Brother Mashinda, any questions so far?
No questions right now. Interesting story, and yeah, just listening right now. Thank you, but then thank you guys for coming.
Okay, Professor Rock.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. First of all, I want to thank you, sister, for your gallant fight and your struggle to get your dignity and get your support for the relocation, and how you fought the bureaucracy and the various supervisors that were part of it. Ujima Village have a rich history.
That's right.
It may not have been a struggle. It may have been not. It may have been a struggle to get reparations and or relocation, and to be respected as human beings. But it originally started with struggle. There would be no Ujima Village if it wasn't for the struggle in 1965, Watts Rebellion. And Ujima is one of the principals of Kwanzaa, which Dr. Karenga.
That's right.
The name. And that's how I got its name. Work and responsibility. Collective work and responsibility. And so it was originally supposed to be some like townhouses for middle, for working class Black people to move in.
Yeah, sure was.
It was supposed to be an oasis. It had a lake. It had people used to fish at the lake. It had parks. I mean, all kind of little recreational things that it had. And she is 100% correct that it was built on Exxon's gas tankers that was up under the ground.
That's right.
Nobody knew that, you understand? Not even us that was fighting for it, and they decided to use that land for the Ujima Village. But at first, the people were happy until they found out that many of them were catching cancer. And then they converted, then HUD bought it. Because see, HUD, it was a private owner at first with HUD support. Then the private owner either sold it or HUD bought it out for him. And that's when they began to mistreat the residents.
Excuse me, can I tell you they bought it for $1?
Yeah, well,
okay, $1. Okay, yeah, I have to put that in there. Sorry. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. $1. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a giveaway. And so, but and the reason they did that was because of the contamination. See, the entrance was off 120th, to Yuma, even though it went all the way back to the park side, where Magic Johnson Park is now. But at the same time, my brother used to fish over there. My sister had a place over there. And so they moved out as soon as they thought they would cancel. They were waiting for the struggle to stay and get resources, because she was working and she has moved. But the struggle for Eugene Village, it take a person like the author of the book to bring forth at this date really what happened to the residents, because as she said, they were just trying to give them some money to move, and then there was a petition, if I'm not mistaken, sometimes in the early 80s or early or late 70s, by some people to stay and to bring attention to it. And I get the name of the sister that brought forth the petition, because Mark Ridley Thomas came late. You know, he was a city councilman.
Supervisor.
That was late. That was in the 90s. He got supervisor. Before that, he was president of the NAACP.
Yeah, he was.
And then he got city council, and then he went to the assembly, then he went to the Senate, and he's currently facing prison if he's not already in it.
No, but he keep appealing it.
Yeah, well, I don't blame him. And you know, and so it's just a struggle. I mean, so many people was miserable. Now they're built on Magic Johnson Park, because people used to walk up there, you know, on the trail. They had a trail that people walked on it. And at Magic Johnson, they built a big
community center.
Yeah, well, yeah, community center on top of the recreation center. But it's beautiful, man. And people lining up to use it for banquet. I don't understand how they charge the contamination for just Eugene Village, when the whole park, up to the new Burger King and businesses on Avalon, back all the way up to Smart and Final on El Segundo and Central. And there's some houses right next to Magic Johnson Park, the Spruill stayed in, and then across from Ujima Village was houses off 120th. But it was a tragedy with good intention, because see, out of that came Mafunda Institute. We built it on 103rd in Wilmington, along with the Watts Health Foundation. And they called it Los Angeles / Willowbrook. That's what they call Ujima Village, located Los Angeles / Willowbrook. But the point is that she's done a great thing to bring this attention. And it should be like Bruce Beach, where they had to give them people back money for all that type of stuff.
And, exactly.
I wish her well for that struggle. Mm-hmm. And like she said, it's hard to get people to participate in the struggle, not because they don't want to. It's just that, you know, a lot of people got old. A lot of people, like you said, they were relocating to Fontana and San Bernardino and Lancaster and Palmdale. And so they just say, I just want to live. I ain't got time for a long struggle. Because I'm pretty sure she had a long struggle to get her money. And you know, a lot of, it was other people that didn't want to move, and they had to come to some terms with them. But it was a struggle. And what happened was, the Black groups, nationalist groups in the 60s, in the late 60s were victims of COINTELPRO. So they couldn't get in the fight. And they helped people, all the activist organizations and activists. They weren't there in that area anymore. I mean, you would think WLCAC would have gotten involved, and you would think other civil rights groups would have gotten involved. But because you had Yvonne Bratz-Weber, along with following her, Mark Wrigley Thomas, Maxine Waters, and all of them, they just didn't get involved. And
See, one of the reasons why Maxine Waters didn't get involved, because it was Laura Richardson's district at the time.
Yeah, but
because she came over, she came in, when my little girl got hit by a car and died, she came and got me. And she said she read the book and she cried because she did not know I was going through all of that.
I'm talking about in the beginning of the struggle.
Oh, okay.
You see, you got there, I think you said in the 80s.
Right, right.
Yeah, but the struggle for social justice and housing started way before then.
But why would they build a unit on top of an oil refinery without cleaning it out? And I've been told all my life that once a place is contaminated, it's always contaminated. Now, that's what I heard.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't care how far you dig down. If it's contaminated, it's contaminated. And they put that recreation center there. And so I took a casket in to represent the people that died. Mark Wrigley Thomas, Jim Hill, Sweet Alice, Channel 2 News, was all sitting on the stage. Okay, I took a casket in. The sheriff let me put the casket. I put the casket in the back of my SUV. The casket was hanging out of the SUV, and no one said to me, "Hey, Miss Smith, what you doing with a casket? It could have been a dead body in there." Not one person said to me, "Why do you have a casket?" I was representing all the people that died. Somebody paid something off, not to say. People protesting don't even have a casket. I had a casket.
Yeah. Okay, Roxy, I'll come back later because I matter what she's doing and bringing attention to that history. And hopefully it'll catch on and she'll get support. Because a lot of the people did catch cancer and other asthma and other respiratory diseases that were living over there. And so a lot of people, some people voluntarily left, but then there was others that said, "No, I'm gonna stay." And I think it was 300 something, I think it was 65 that stayed for a little while. I don't know how long in the 80s, because I was teaching at Long Beach State then. But that's a tragedy. But there are other landfills throughout Compton that they tried to build houses on and things of that nature. So go ahead, and you ask somebody else, Rashi.
Okay. Anita?
Yes.
Do you have a question for Naveline or a comment?
Well, you know what? I have more so of a comment because I'm 55 years old and I grew up in Los Angeles. Born and raised. And it wasn't until I got to meet Naveline and hear about her story that I even heard about this situation. So it is very important, and I think her struggle it was important to get out there. That's why I was so adamant in trying to help her get her book done, because this story needs to be told, and a lot of history again has been hidden that we don't get to hear about. So this is another one of those stories where the struggle was important to know, but it was hidden. And now you see a lot of the politicians are in trouble for the things that they've done throughout the years So it just kind of corroborates, you know, the corruption, even with Mark Ridley Thomas and his lack of doing anything in the process. But it was just important for me to really learn about her story. And I learned about it only because, you know, I did her book. So I think her story needs to be told, and it needs to be, you know, gotten out on a wide range in that aspect, because I'm pretty sure that this isn't the only place where this has happened and they've swept it under the rug.
That's good.
Oh, true. That's good. Oh, okay. Thank you. Linda, how you doing, Linda?
Oh yes, I'm good. And I don't have any real questions but I admire what you're doing. Sister Smith, that's just phenomenal that you're still sticking in there. Even though this is my first time hearing about it, because I'm in Florida, but that's why I'm glad that she has the book, because I'm definitely needing to read your book. And can you please put up the book, the cover of the book, so I can see it? And where can I get it from?
Get it from Amazon. And I also want to share with you guys the story that I'm telling, 10 Days in Watts. They just did a segment on 10 Days in Watts. They came to my house and interviewed me, PBS. And then they went to other people and they did stories. And the director got an Emmy Award for the story. Well, mm-hmm. I'm going to reach out to him, because I feel that you just got an Emmy Award for something that I did. I didn't even know he got the Emmy Award. I just got a call. But I'm a part of that Emmy. So if I'm a part of that Emmy, I feel that something else should be told besides the 10 days to watch, because I'm a part of that Emmy. And I'm going to get it out there. I'm going to talk about what happened to the African-American people until I leave this earth, because we're still dying.
Excuse me, sister. Did you talk with the National Association of Black Journalists yet? Have you met with them?
No, I have not. It's just the thought of them leaving me there in a place, 365 units on 16 acres of land. Every unit was boarded up but mine. And I told Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas, if anything happens to my son, I'm coming for you. Y'all gonna leave me there? Still paying rent. I was still paying rent. I was the only one there, and I was still paying rent, because I wasn't going to leave. And it's just so important to know how some people want to keep you down. They don't want to lift you up. We should have had a meeting with everybody there and told them this is a good time for you guys to buy a house, because the money is there for you to buy a house. The money is there. But where is the $8 million that was left for us? What happened to it? $1,500 and a Section 8 voucher. That's all they got. Now, it was three other families that got $50,000, I think. But the rest of them, they took that $1,500 and that Section 8 and they ran. And then they punished me for staying there fighting. I'm still trying to see what did I do wrong. And then if you go to YouTube, you can see me walking around. I tell you, ain't nobody out here. Excuse me. Ain't nobody out here but me. And I had to let my son play in that over there in Ujima Village by himself. I had to let him go outside and play. People walking around. And guess what? They couldn't turn off the water. They couldn't shut off the electricity. How much money did you guys pay fighting me? How much was it? Because you couldn't turn off the power. So how much money did you guys spend fighting me? You couldn't turn off the water. You couldn't turn off the electrical or the gas. So people were living in abandoned places. You know, my neighbors, Birds was living there. Anybody who wanted to come stay there could come stay there.
All right, let me go to Brother Hembrick. Hey, Joe.
Hey, evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Hey, sister. I, you know, I worked at Centennial for about 20 years right around the corner. Those few things about the village. I remember I had a few students that were over there, and then they left. But anyway, and I have some friends that walk over there, and I try to discourage them from that walking because of what's in the ground. And, you know, students used to ditch over there during the school day, and we would go there and get them out. And my old secretary has told me that she's a part of a senior citizen group that meets there Monday through Friday or something in a building over there. So the thing I'm trying to point out is why would, and, you know, right across the street from Centennial, down in the water drain, they had these big old hoses for I don't know how many years they had it there. I guess called themselves sucking that stuff out of the ground. Oil thing. I guess that's why they were there. But they were on Central, just south of the chicken place. Used to be right there on the corner. I forget the name of what it used to be. But anyway, it was kind of like under the school. Mm-hmm. And it was before you got to the apartments right there. It's a big water drain. And I know it was that for, I don't know how long those things are around. And I read an article back when I was working there about the number of people who had died or got sick from cancer from living over there. So I can kind of understand the people that were, you know, getting that kind of information and want to get out of there. I would want my family sticking around with the cancer stuff, you know, that kind of exposure. But I used to go over there, you know, early on. As a matter of fact, I learned how to cast a fishing pole, cast it over there at that lake. I think that was back in the 80s. Anyway, appreciate your struggle. My question is, how all of those people that moved out of there, they just sent them out of there with a $1,500 voucher.
And don't leave out $1,500 and a Section 8 voucher. That's all they got. That's all they got. That's a slap in the Black community's face. No matter how you look at it, no matter what you say, and like I said before at the beginning, the attorneys said, and it's a whole list of people that are backing this up, we should have knew it was contaminated before we moved in. It was a class action lawsuit and it was thrown out because we should have known it was contaminated before we moved in. And like I'll keep telling people, when I signed my lease, did nobody say, hey, Naveline, don't move in here because it's contaminated. Do you think I would have moved in a place that was contaminated?
Well, let me tell you something, sister. This is a saying I have about politics. When it comes to politics, truth is just a word that rhymes with baby Ruth. When you're dealing with politics, that's what you're dealing with. So, you know, and not just the village, but I tell these other Negroes where I live over here in South Compton, otherwise called Carson, and a lot of these houses are sitting on the same kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Used to be a dump. Matter of fact, currently they're building something over here by this golf course where that stadium was supposed to be for the Raiders that never came about. They're building some big team sports facility over there for them, and they know what's in the ground over there. I don't understand why. And then also, this, I won't mention his name, but he's a Negro up in Sacramento. And we had a vote on fracking over here. You know that slant drilling where they drill for oil on a slant? Over there, wouldn't even vote. I guess the white folks scared him and said if he voted against the fracking, they were going to, you know, deal with him politically. But anyway, that's all I got to say about this issue. I feel for the people. I have some friends that lived over there. But I don't think nobody's worth dying over and over.
Well, they dying. We still dying.
They are.
And like I said, Supervisor Mark Murphy Thomas said, we were supposed to have medical for the rest of our lives. That's not true. He said it out of his own mouth at the only meeting he had.
Well, like the saying I just told you, when it comes to politics, truth is just a word that rhymes with Baby Ruth.
Sure.
That's all I got to say. Good night. Good night, folks.
Good night. Good night.
All right. And Aveline, your friend right there, does she have a question or a comment?
Well, I have a comment. I'm from the Bay Area, from Oakland. And so I didn't know too much about Ujima Village, the history, but I did do some reading. And apparently that land that was designated for Ujima Village was originally supposed to be for the staff at Martin Luther King Hospital.
Sure,
I think the professor might know more about that. And so that was just interesting how that turned out. Also, has the grounds
shifted
on that piece of property been labeled safe? Because they do have that community center and they have a potential swimming pool coming up and some kind of dog park coming up. They got the children's play area, and of course you can't eat the fish. You can fish there, but you can't eat the fish. So is the land considered safe or unsafe for public use right now? Does anybody know?
Because
you said once contaminated.
Once
it's
contaminated. I've been told once it's contaminated and it's always contaminated. And I just want to Pat Forte, we're at the library. She has a reading workshop group here every Thursday. And she's the one that got me started and writing a book, because that's what she does. She helped people form the book, the outline, and it's very educational. And it's at the Bill Brew.
It's called the AC Bill Brew's Writers Workshop. And just you go on Facebook and check us out. AC Bill Brew Writers Workshop.
And where is it located?
We're here for the community. It's at Bill Brew Library on Main. It's 150 El Segundo. 150 El Segundo. East El Segundo. I think it's at East.
Yeah.
East El Segundo.
And the cross street is Main?
Main, right. Main.
Okay.
That's a new library they built.
Main is actually another street that's a little further east. But let me mention this. The Bill Brew Library has the largest selection of Black books around.
You got it. Yes.
Yeah.
The Black Resource Center is one of the biggest in the United States.
Mm.
They won't let you check them out where they didn't used to, but they do have a selection there.
Can't take it. No, you can't take it at all.
They got a lot of stuff on microfiche, too. We used to have Black newspapers that, like the old Compton. American Express, and we had Compton Examiner. The Bulletin was there, but we had another Compton newspaper there, and at that time, what she was talking about, they had the Los Angeles Examiner, that was a newspaper. And they went out of business in close to the 90s and the 80s. But it's a struggle. I mean, there's no doubt that one of the reasons it didn't pick up was because of that was mainly affected. See, that was built for Black people.
Specifically. Sure was. Yeah, sure was. Black
people specifically. And see, Martin Luther King Hospital came later. You understand? Because we're talking about the early 70s when they began to construct it.
Right.
Then they kept fiddling around what they was going to do, but they had problems with residents even before her in the 80s about moving, because people didn't want to move and they wasn't giving them enough. And it was a lot of petitions.
I didn't know anything about that.
Kenneth Hahn was a supervisor when it started. And then came John Brathwaite Burke and then Mark Rigney.
See, yeah. I didn't know, I didn't hear nothing about they were trying to get people out of there. First of all, I have been also told, and I read, you're never supposed to build any houses or apartment units on top of an oil refinery.
You're not even supposed to be approved. You're not supposed to be approved.
But see, the thing is, but they did it. And to me, it's like, okay, let's sell this place for $1 and move all the African-American people in here to die. Let's do that. Let's move them on in.
I'm not sure about the requirements for soil testing back in the early 70s, in 1970s, when it originally was commissioned to start building. But nowadays, you can't even get a permit to add onto your garage hardly.
You're right about that. You know, it's just the saddest thing.
So they shouldn't even let them build it if it was contaminated. That's my point. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't even been built.
No, it shouldn't have.
Or they should have built it at another location.
They should, and then gonna, and then push everything under the rug, and then walk out with their chest up, like when they tore it down, like they really did something, and made all the Black folks move with nothing. It's just sad.
Are you Professor Amon-Ra?
Yes.
Okay, I have a question. So when they put the, when Exxon put the tanks down under the ground, I guess I'm saying it right, the tanks were sealed at that point, and then they began to leak later on. Is that the deal?
That's what happened. They came a little.
So they were technically safe at first, and then nature or something happened, and they got shifted and leaked or something?
That's what they say. But I'm like Nadine, you know, they try to say that, you know, the pipes ruptured, or they were old pipes, and it starts seeping in the ground. You know, I agree with you. A lot more research needs to be done about how it was given permission to build it, and the treatment of the people from the 70s all the way up to where Nadine is.
Naveline
did. Because it's like she's fighting for herself, but a lot of other people can benefit from that fight.
No, I'm fighting for me, and I'm fighting for me and the people that was in Eugene Phyllis that didn't have a voice, that wasn't, that didn't stand up for their rights.
That's what I'm saying.
No, you said for me. I'm fighting for them because they all ran and left me there. So I'm still fighting for them.
Okay.
Because they didn't have a voice, because they were scared to speak up. Because I went to the meetings all the time, and I stood up and I spoke. So, I went there so much that I was told, can't you stop her from coming down here talking?
I have a question. Because I wasn't going to leave. Is there a statute of limitations for that? Or those people are still able to?
It's expensive to sue now, man. I mean, the attorneys want
class action.
Want big retainers and filing the petitions and then getting old witnesses. A lot
what's
of
that were
really there.
Bruce Beach?
Well, Bruce Beach, what was years for them? Bruce Beach, they got compensated.
They relatives did.
Okay, well, somebody out there. It's somebody out there.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe people will hear about your struggle with your book and come and help you, but it's going to be difficult because the atmosphere for support. I mean, you used to have Black attorneys. You used to have community attorneys for the poor people. I forget what they used to call them, but they used to come out and help people with lawsuits. They had one in downtown Compton. But at the same time, it's, you know, people, for whatever reason, you know, they didn't want to get in. They, you know, they, like she said, they just took the money and left. Because most of them left not because they just wanted to get out of there also. And they took the first train coming and whatever they offered them, 1500 in Section 8. It'll take you almost 2 or 3 years to get on Section 8 now.
Yeah, but if you can do better, but see, what they were trying to do to me, I feel, and it backfired. They said if we can just get her to take this Section 8 voucher, had a good job, making good money, and then in a couple of months, we're going to pull it from her. I know what they were trying to do, but it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
See, I know what they were trying to do because I wasn't going to take the Section 8 voucher. I don't care. And the $1,500. Where was I going with that? You know, and then after I got the money, the 30,000, well, it was 50, but remember they gave me 20 and told me to get the hell out. So I got the 30,000. I went to Compton, that's where I live, and got $87,000 of grant money. I took that $110,000 of grant money, put it down on a $300,000 house to show the Black community how to do it. I have had 3 orientations in my house to try to teach Black African-American people how you can get a house with grant money, you know, and nobody has purchased a house when, you know, I don't understand, because it's certain things that you can do that will make you, I mean, why do you want to rent all your life when you can buy a house? Because the funds are there. So I gave 3 orientations free of charge, and no one has purchased anything at this point. I didn't just say, oh, well, I won, I got a house. No, I didn't do that. I tried to give back, to let people know how you can do it.
Do you plan to do that anytime in the future? To have
I'm very upset because no one is doing anything. I'm very upset because no one has said, okay, let me just try and see what I can do. Mortgage is $400 a month.
Well,
that includes
a lot of people don't want to put forth the effort. They get comfortable, like Professor Riley. They find comfort in their oppression, but I mean, so if you are approached about giving that information out, you will share. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have lenders and realtors ready right now. But it's in my book, I tell you how many bad lenders and how many realtors I ran into. It didn't happen overnight. I still had to fight the realtors and the lenders. I mean, the things that I went through, it's just unbelievable. And I'm still standing. It's unbelievable. All because I wanted a house.
Well, what I can say, you're built to last.
Well, I guess so. Because I ain't went down yet.
And your story should serve as inspiration to those who are looking for ways to, you know, stand up to the system that tries to limit people.
Right.
So now, is there anything you want to leave us with this evening?
I want to leave the community with, don't never give up. Don't never let anyone tell you, oh, I can't do that. Whatever you want in life, you know, sometimes you have to take a fight. Sometimes you have to get where you want, to get what you want. And I believe in fighting all the way, you know, and I just want justice. To me, justice was never served. And I still want justice. I want somebody to step in and say, okay, Ms. Smith, let me see what we can do. Let me see what we can do.
Go ahead, Professor Rock.
Neighbor Lynn, what year did you move in to Ujima Village?
I moved in Ujima Village in 1980.
1980.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the struggle started before that,
mm-hmm.
as far as people. But, you know, a lot of people you know, the kids can come and fight for it because, you know, when because people start moving in the early 70s. And you know, you can't find them hardly. And many of them transition. And then second, it's like the Tulsa, Oklahoma. There's only about 3-4 survivors of Tulsa, but their kids are following suit. It's a, I mean, the government has always mistreated those type of programs. We got a lot of places that were oil fields in Compton are contaminated soil over there off of Alondra, just between Avalon and Central. There's a big old lot that they can't build on because of the contamination, but they want to build a park on it. And then Carlton, as Joe was, Brother Hembrick, historian Hembrick was saying, many of the houses in Carson, the early ones that they built are slab houses, the pipes up under the house, and they used to think that would keep everything out. If they, you know, because if you have a plumbing problem in Compton, you got to dig up the floor. You know, if a pipe busts up in your house. And they didn't have rooms up on a lot of the houses. So, I mean, it was a lot of schemes to get around it. But like she said, people were just happy that they were building the houses for working class people at first. Because HUD just insured the loan to the people who was building their private sector that was building it. And HUD eventually bought it from them and became the owners. And they, to my knowledge, have not been able to get a developer to deal with the village, but they do business all around it. That's why I don't understand. How come that just section that she was pointing out where the people live was contaminated, and the park, and all the way up to El Segundo, I mean, Avalon, and back towards Central, there's houses where they're affected too. I mean, because they're on the same block, you know, I mean, you know, it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's amazing to me too. It's amazing to me how everything went down. It's really amazing.
So, Brother Ahi, since you came, were you able to catch anything and you have a comment or a question, Brother Ahi?
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm just, it sounds like a similar situation we had here with Black Bottom in Detroit, where there was a thriving Black community. Now, I just caught on the tail end. It sounds like somebody, you were forced to move out of your beloved home, and they dislocated a whole community. Is that correct?
Yes, with $1,500 and a Section 8 voucher.
Well, the same thing was done in Detroit, but it wasn't until about 20 years. This happened in the early 50s, I believe, where Black Bottom was thriving. It was sort of like our Tulsa, Wall Street. It was where all the Black businesses were. We were really thriving as a community. They ran 75 straight through that area. And about 20 years ago, they built homes in that area. And, but of course, all the people had passed along. The progeny, the children of the people were given access or given a chance to purchase these homes. But they didn't give us any money or any kind of stipend. We were supposed to get some type of discount. And the total cost of the homes just made it just totally unreasonable to leave where I am now or to invest in that property. So it's, you know, is that a similar type of situation?
Well, the place was, they had oil contamination or gas contamination underneath the properties. And that's why they had to leave, because it was contaminated. But
okay, so a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a little different, but I tell you what, Navalene stood up for herself, and that's a beautiful thing for somebody to fight for their rights. And we need more people like her. So hopefully...
It's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. Hopefully somebody hear this and can benefit from it. And that's why we do what we do. I appreciate you, Davaline, for coming on, telling your story. And I'll show the book again so people could purchase the book and read about it. It's a true story. Right there, you get on Amazon.
I appreciate you letting me come on to tell the true story about Ujima Village. Really, I really appreciate your time to give me the opportunity to tell what really happened.
Well, you're quite welcome, and we appreciate you. Professor Rob?
No. I was just saying it's a valiant fight to hold out and still bring it up, because most people then forgot about it, you know, that was a part of the struggle, the original struggle. I mean, it was so much done to Black people after they rebelled in 65, and that's even in Detroit in 67. As he said, they still got abandoned houses in Detroit, but they're trying to rebuild. But the problem is that, like you said, she can't get attorneys or community leaders to pick up the fight. Also, she can fight it legally in the court and try to get suits and things of that nature. It's going to be hard to get some attorneys to do it unless they're part of a network of attorneys that help people in this type of situation. They see that they can win and get a quick settlement. They don't want a long-term thing. And it's hard to get a attorney. I'm just surprised that at the time that they discovered the contamination, more people with resources didn't come and help the people and give them guidance of what to do. Well, because she stood up on her own, you know, and that's different. When and she won. She got 20,000
But see, I didn't win. I didn't win. And the reason why I'm saying I didn't win is because what about the other people? What's $50,000? That's still a slap in my face, because, like I said, Porter Ranch got $8.5 billion for their for the explosion. But like you said, see, it's a difference. See, they had top of the line attorneys to represent them. You see what I'm saying? But in the poor neighborhood, we don't have attorneys to represent us. When we did have an attorney and they got paid off, I know they got paid off. You can't make me believe that. And they said, well, let's go with, they should have known. How in the world, I need somebody to tell me this, how in the world can an attorney say they should have known it was contaminated before they move in, and all these people agree, and that's okay? How could that happen?
Easy. That's why we fight for justice, you know. they justified shooting and killing people. You know,
and then all these people agree. Yeah, they should have known. Yeah, uh-huh. They should have known it was contaminated.
Well, the people who built it should have known.
Exactly.
I mean, we was fighting and we didn't know. We thought we were winning some for the people.
Exactly.
And they decided to go in there, and it wasn't until years later that they found out the soil was contaminated, because people kept getting sick. It was, you know, and people kept getting sick and with respiratory illnesses. And like Joe said, people used to go there to fish. Yeah, right there in the lake. They had a lake. They had all kind of little activity for the people that lived there in the beginning. So, and it was designed for working class Black people to move back to the community, you know, and that's because, you know, with having an exodus, people were selling after, you know, people selling their businesses and moving and things like that, because there were a number of Black businesses right there off of Central, all the way down, almost all the way downtown to about Alondra, Black businesses, hamburger stands, shoe shine, short, small businesses, small mom and pop store, you know, WLCHC was there. So there's a lot of richness. Then they built, he said, they built freeway straight in his area. And then when they built the 105, they cut the city in half almost, you know, condemned people houses and eminent domain and all that type of stuff. And it just broke up. And so urban renewal became urban removal. And and then they killed off and with counterintelligence program leaders and activists that were strong on these type of issues back in the day. Sweet Alice is still around, and Watkins' sons are still around. But, you know, she needed somebody with some money that wanted justice for the people to help, you know, because you can't fight them without money. You know, I mean, a cause, Black people dying. Whew, I mean, they sent to Vietnam, you know, I mean, that's who fought the war in Vietnam, mostly Black and people of color. But still, it's a good gallant fight, Neighborline. And I really appreciate your struggle and your steadfast. And I think you're going to win. I think.
Oh, I know. Win. Look, let me tell you something. It's a time for everything. That's what we're talking about. It's just a matter of time. I already know. I'm not even worried about it. It's just a matter of time because it's going to go down. Trust me. It ain't over with yet. The fat lady ain't sung. I want y'all to know that. It ain't over with.
All right. Okay, Professor Rob, we have anything for next Tuesday?
I'm trying to. No, but on the 17th, we got Dr. Karanga.
Yeah, we're going to.
On the 17th. Next, let me call you tomorrow. I'm trying to get Spencer Haywood. I got to get Oswald Crazy. Joe, you know anybody got Oswald Crazy phone number?
Only one I know is Renoco, and he's, you know, he made his.
Yeah, you know, I know he transcended.
I'll see where I can find somebody.
Yeah, any of the people that traveled to Egypt with him?
I don't know.
So we don't see him after. Yeah.
So next Wednesday, we got Brother Quabenot coming back, and he's still fighting against Netflix and also the radio stations out of Gary, Indiana. So we'll have him next week. All right, so we're going to end. I appreciate everybody coming out, and
thank
we'll be
you so
here.
Much. Again, thank you. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome. Good having you.
Thank you very much.
And so,
all right. God bless.
We'll be here right back next week. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Okay. Everybody have a good evening. Okay.